that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger, inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Hey there, Giants fans. Welcome to the latest episode of our Talk is Cheap podcast. Daryl Slater here with Bob Rookover. As usual, NJ Advanced Media, the Star Ledger, NJ.com, coming to you here on Tuesday morning, January the 24th. And the Giants, of course, on Saturday night got crushed in Philadelphia. The bottom line, overmatched. The gap is large between the Giants and the Eagles at this point, and the Giants in the top of the NFC, because that's where the Eagles sit. Giants lost to the Eagles by 26 and 31 points this year, so there's no way of sugarcoating it. The gap is large. The Giants still have a long way to go to get back to being a Super Bowl contender. But the bottom line is it was a successful first season, of course, for Brian Daboll. They won a playoff game on the road in Minnesota. Obviously, they made the playoffs, and so they exceeded expectations. But now we'll really pitch this ahead because we've spent a lot of time talking about the season over the course of the season. But we have not really spent a lot of time talking about the offseason stuff because there were competitive games to be played, unlike past Giants seasons where that was not the case. So it's Joe Shane time now. I mean, Brian Daboll showed you he can coach and then he can get more out of a roster than people expected. Now Joe Shane has to go get him some talent, has to help him close the gap. And he has the salary cap space to do it. And let's see what kind of GM Joe Shane is here, Bob. And it'll be a fascinating offseason for him.
Absolutely. As Steve Politi wrote today, you know, it's one thing to get to the playoffs and go from a team that was really just completely irrelevant to being a playoff team. Now there's another step to take. Can you become a Super Bowl contender? The Giants weren't a Super Bowl contender. Anybody that thought they were, because they made the playoffs, I mean, even won a playoff game, were going to go to Phoenix for the big game, was delusional, to say the least. But, you know, they do now have a foundation in place. Brian Daboll's way of doing things will be the way going forward. And Joe, as you said, you know, now it's up to Joe Shane to get him some better players in some very important spots. Never an easy thing to do. He does have more cap space, so he has more ways of doing some things, but it's still not an easy task to, you know, he's got to get the right players. You know, we can talk about, and we should talk about, like, what this his first rookie class ended up being like, and because obviously the draft is going to be always the most important thing when building a team. So a lot of work ahead for Joe Shane in the offseason.
And then he mentioned it yesterday, Joe Shane did, in terms of the gap closing stuff. The Giants, accounting the playoff loss to the Eagles, were 1-5-1 against their division opponents.
1-4-1.
And then if you count the playoff loss.
Okay, sure.
And so obviously either one, 1-4-1, 1-5-1, not good. They're trying to get back to the top of the NFC East, and the teams in their way, obviously the Cowboys and most notably and glaringly the Eagles. And they have to be able to get, I mean, look, Howie Roseman's done a great job getting talent for Nick Sirianni. And now it is Joe Shane's turn to do that. I mean, let's just, like, no more Dave Gettleman excuses here. Not that he was framing Joe Shane this as excuses, but enough already. Like, everyone knows Dave Gettleman did a terrible job. Look, no one's talked about it more than us here, and no one's crushed him. And enough with the revisionist history that, like, Dave Gettleman, because he drafted Saquon Barkley and Daniel Jones, he's all is forgiven. You know, no, he did a terrible job.
If you have a pick in the first 10 and you mess it up, you're really not doing a good job. There's a lot more to the job than that. And a lot of people get the picks in the top 10 right. And, exactly. and And you could even argue that even though Saquon's turned into a terrific Pro Bowl player, whether it was the right pick or not, because of the reason what we're going to get to here and discuss whether the Giants are going to keep him because of how they value that position.
It was not the right. It was not the right pick at number two. That was a bad. Bottom line is it wasn't. Joe Shane mentioned again yesterday, we're in tough cap situation when we got here, blah, blah, blah. He even mentioned something about like the roster talent. No, okay, we get it. You were in a tough situation. A lot of it was Dave Gettleman's fault. That's often how it works when a new GM comes in. But no more excuses. It's over. Like, it's your turn to put this your stamp on this team. This is your team now. Everything here going forward falls on you. Obviously, last year's draft class when they had a ton of draft capital falls on him. This free agency class when he got have a lot more cap space. It falls on him.
The one thing I would say is I think he did better at, and he actually complimented his staff for this, better at bringing in guys on the fringe, yes, to contribute to this roster than he did with his 11 draft picks.
Isaiah Hodgins, yeah.
I think he did a great job with that kind of stuff. Whether they graded out as great players or not, Jalen Smith ended up being such a big part of this defense because he ended up being the middle linebacker after they released, drawing a blank here, Daryl, help me, in training camp.
Blake Martinez and Blake then Tate Crowder.
Thank you. After they released Blake Martinez, Jalen Smith ends up being the middle linebacker, really. Fabian Moreau comes in. Hodgins is another guy who came in and was certainly a big contributor for them. Nick McLeod is another one of those. Jason Pinnock, those kinds of guys. He did a great job of bringing in those kind of guys. And I would argue that he did a better job with that than he actually did with the draft. And obviously you don't grade a draft after 1 year, but I'm just, there's a lot to be told about this draft still. But after 1 year, you would say, hey, he did a great job with this. Let's see. It's still to be determined what happened. And a lot of what happened with the draft picks, as I wrote for this morning, was they got killed by injuries. It was amazing. Four ACL injuries of the 11th guys you drafted is just either it's bad luck or a bad field.
So. Yeah. Well, and as Julian Love mentioned to you yesterday, right, the new field turf surface will be what's like the same as Seattle and New Orleans, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so they're not getting grass at least till 2026.
Yeah, the players aren't getting their wish there, but hopefully for the sake of everyone's health, that surface is upgraded. Well, and before we get into the off-season stuff, and real quick here, we'll top it with the news of today as we're talking Tuesday morning. Mike Kafka, the Giants play calling offensive coordinator, will get a second interview with the Texans. That'll be in person Wednesday down in Houston. He interviewed and I hate the word virtually here. No, he actually interviewed, and it happened via video chat on a Sunday. He interviewed via video chat, which is the way that's my pet peeve. Sunday with the Texans, the Colts, and the Panthers. So obviously a sought after head coaching candidate. You could say whatever. I mean, is the Texans job intriguing or is it worth going? Bottom line is if he gets offered the job, he's probably taking it. So what does Brian Daboll do? We talked about this a little bit before we came on. So like, what do you think he, all things considered, he would and should do if Mike Kafka does get a head coaching job?
Yeah, I think it's, as we discussed this morning, I think it's a really easy solution if he wants it to be. I mean, if you go back and look at Brian Daboll's history with Shea Tierney that started in Alabama in 2017, he, at that point, they became inseparable. Daboll leaned on Tierney heavily to get accommodated, get his feet on the ground in Alabama. And then when he left Alabama after a year, he took him with him to Buffalo. And then when he left Buffalo after 4 years, he brought him to the Giants. I think he has a ton of trust in Shea Tierney. I know Shea Tierney's been around when he was in Buffalo. He was always around Ken Dorsey and Brian Daboll. So he knows that this offense. And in East Rutherford, he was always around Kafka and Daboll. So he knows You know, as someone said to me, I think it was Pat Shermer who said to me when I was doing a story at Shea Tierney, the quarterback's coach is the guy who goes up to the gets on the headset with the offensive coordinator at crunch time and says, here's the five plays that he's most comfortable with, your quarterback's most comfortable with. These are the things that are going to work. So he's already got all that in his head. And then you can solve the quarterback coach problems by simply making, if he's ready to do it, I think if you make him the right offer, he'll be ready to do it. Davis Webb, you make him your quarterback's coach. Also well-versed in this offense, you can make a seamless transition by simply doing that. And you don't have to go through the headache of bringing in outside guys, and interviewing outside guys who you then would have to get on board with what you do as an offense. To me, it seems like a pretty easy solution. And, the one other thing on there is they do also have an offense coordinator on their current staff, a former offense coordinator, and Mike Rowe, the receivers coach, who did it with the Eagles but did not call plays. So there are options right in-house to me.
For sure. And I think, the potential con, I guess, of the Shea Tierney thing is he has not called plays. Now, Mike Kafka hadn't before either, but Mike Kafka had been a full-time position coach for longer, and this past season was the first year in which Shea Tierney had been a full-time position coach. So that's something to consider. I think a lot of the pros, as you mentioned, all the continuity factor is important. Also, there's a lot of teams looking for offensive coordinators out there right now. Obviously, the teams that fired their head coach. And then a lot of other teams like, Jets, Rams, you go down the list of all these teams that like Ravens who fired the OC. So there's a lot of it'll be a lot of competition if Brian Daboll goes and looks outside. As far as Mike Rowe goes, didn't call plays, obviously, with the Eagles in 18 and 19. Doug Peterson did. So the only time Mike Rowe's ever called plays at any level was 06 to 08 when he was Virginia's offensive coordinator. And so I do think, probably Shea Tierney would be the guy in the pecking order, all the things you said, because of all the things you said, to get that job. So we'll see what Brian Daboll does. Maybe he doesn't have a decision to make. Maybe Mike Kafka doesn't get the Texans job or any other job and he's back. But continuity, obviously, and this goes into what we're about to talk about now, continuity, obviously, really important because, as Joe Shane confirmed what everyone knew, Daniel Jones will be back as the Giants quarterback next year, whether that's playing under the one-year franchise tag, whether that's – I'm sure they're going to franchise tag him and just use that as a baseline for negotiations, and maybe something gets done. I think it probably will. And if it doesn't, he's tagged. And so he's not going anywhere. So continuity will be really, really important in terms of scheme, in terms of voice, all that stuff for Daniel Jones to build on a big year. So honestly, it's not really – worth breaking down the whole Jones situation that much. The bigger question is Saquon Barkley, right? I mean, based on what Joe Shane said yesterday at his press conference.
Absolutely. I mean, it was pretty clear to anybody sitting in that auditorium that the Giants are going to do what they have to do to get Daniel Jones to come back. But they're not going to do absolutely everything. They're, as he talked about, there's a walkaway number for players, and in Saquon's case, he made it clear that they weren't that close when they talked in the middle of the season during the bye week, and he made it clear that there's a salary cap to deal with, and the Giants aren't different than I would say almost every team in the league. I don't know which teams do look at it this way, but running back position is just not valued as much as a quarterback position or a lot of positions because of the rate that they turn over. I mean, and the ability to get them in later rounds. These guys last 5-6 years because they're constantly in high speed collisions, and they're constantly getting hurt because they get banged up because they get hit so much. So it's understandable why they feel that way. It to lack of a better term, it sucks for running backs. As a human being, I'd cheer for running backs to get big deals just because of what they have to go through. But it was clear yesterday where Joe Shane stands on the subject.
And so many of these second contracts have become cautionary tales for the position. I think there's obviously some people in this market who cover this team that are clouded by sentimentality. And I think relationships. And, you know, the fact that Saquon Barkley is a nice guy, and he is, has been pleasant, has been a pro. I mean, but look, I mean, just because a guy says he wants to be a Giant for life and doesn't want to reset the market doesn't make him, you know, Gandhi rolled in with, you know, Jim Brown.
It doesn't change Joe Shane's job of evaluating.
Joe Shane has to look at this through a cold calculated lens. I'm sorry, but like, you know, look, if he's willing to, Saquon Barkley is, to return on the deal that they want him back. Like, let's be clear. They're not putting him curbside.
Right.
But I think we need to take a step back and look at this and say, okay, like, you know, the guy, okay, he wants to be a Giant for life. Great. You know, but he's not playing. He's not going to, to his credit, you know, to Barkley's credit, these guys have a small window to maximize their value. If he says, I want this amount of money, and the Giants say no, that's not a negative on him. Like, he, okay, go try to get that money elsewhere.
Right. That happens in negotiations all the time, where a guy thinks he's worth something and then he goes out and finds out, well, nobody really wants to pay me this. I like it best here, so I'm going back, you know. So that part could backfire on Saquon if he goes out and finds out he's not worth what he thinks he is to
I wouldn't even say backfire, though, because, like, honestly, like, it's well within, like, go for it. Go look elsewhere. That's honestly, like, good.
Right. That's what free agency is all about.
Yeah. And a lot of this, you know, people know, like, all this sausage gets made, you know, at the scouting combine. That's when, like, tampering happens. Like, it's happening there. Like, players, agents, and team representatives are talking there and setting, you know, price dollars for free agency. So the notion that, like, no conversations happen until March 13th, when the tampering window or the negotiating window opens, that's right. Not true. It'll happen at the combine. His agent will get, gauge the value, and then we'll see what happens. But it's pretty clear they're not going to tag him, because they're going to, reading the tea leaves yesterday, or reading between the lines, they'll tag Daniel Jones, not Saquon Barkley.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. There's no doubt about it. The guy they want to keep, the guy they're going to keep, apparently, as Joe Shane mistakenly spoke, misspoke, that you know, that we're going to bring Daniel Jones back. But, you know, it's clear what's at the top of their agenda. And it is Daniel Jones, and it is not Saquon Barkley. But as you said, they do want to have him back. And they do think he's a terrific player and a terrific teammate, which he is. I mean, he's I've covered sports for 40 years, and I would say probably in the top three most accessible superstars I've ever covered, for sure. You should want him back, but you should also want him back at a price that can, and in a way that fits under your cap and allows you to build your team to another level.
100%. And it's not just about Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley. I mean, they should be paying Dexter Lawrence a lot of money this offseason, period. I mean, the guy should refuse to show up until there is no way on earth that he should be willing to play under the fifth-year option. He was the best interior defensive lineman in the entire NFL this year. He's the best player on the team. Yes, he does not play this more, you know, the valuable position that Daniel Jones does. He's the best player on the team. They need to pay him, period. And he should raise absolute hell until he is paid, and has every right to be doing that. So
that's that part I will disagree with you on.
You don't think they should pay him?
No, that part I agree with you on, that they should try to get him wrapped up to a long-term deal this offseason. But the part about raising hell is
I'm overstating it.
What's that?
I'm overstating it.
Well, to me, this is the, you know, it was his union that negotiated this collective bargaining agreement and these rules. So if the Giants, you know, they're perfectly within their rights, and to me, if the player wants to bitch and moan about something that his union negotiated. This drives me nuts about players sometimes, because they complain about all the stuff, but whenever it comes time, even rules, like, you know, you go to the owners meetings and they have all the, that's where they set the rules for the following season. They have all these, the competition committee has all these things, and you hear the players talk about them during the season, but, you know, then the off season comes and not enough of them are, are vocal out front, but it's also with the collective bargaining agreement, and it's in every sport. We want this, we want this, but we're not going to really think about it too much in the offseason. You know, so, you know, if you don't like the rules, you work to get the rules changed, but don't hold out. That's the kind of stuff that I don't like. So,
well, I think in the NFL now, there is no, like, there's no more like true holding out. Like Dexter Lawrence, if he doesn't show up for voluntary.
Yeah, well, again, that's within their rights to.
Like, he does not deserve an ounce of criticism for not showing up for voluntary OTAs. Like,
absolutely. No, again, within election rules.
That's his leverage. Now, obviously, the fines are so heavy that the training camp holdouts and the mini camp holdouts are almost prohibitive. You can't do that anymore. But he has a very small amount of leverage. And my point, I guess, was that he should use it. You know, does he need to go on Twitter and call Joe Shane a jerk or whatever? No, of course not. But
I don't envision Dexter Lawrence doing anything.
But I think they'll pay him. They should pay him. So
they should.
They'll take care of Jones. They'll take care of Dexter Lawrence. Maybe they take care of Saquon Barkley. And like real quick, before we look at their needs, obviously the Giants looking at right now $54.2 million in cap space. They're third in the league. That number is going to go up to about 61 after they cut Kenny Golladay. That's a no-brainer cut. So in addition to retaining Lawrence or retaining Jones, paying Lawrence, maybe retaining Barkley, the other moves that Joe Shane has to figure out here are what does he do with Julian Love, Darius Slayton, I'd say to a lesser extent, Nick Gates. I don't think Sterling Shepard will be back because he can't stay healthy. Those are the four most notable non-Jones, non-Barkley free agents. I guess we can just take those real quick one by one. Where do you stand on those guys?
So give me the names. Can we start with Julian Love, right?
Sure. Yeah, Love.
Yeah, I think you got to bring him back. I don't know what he's going to that's a tricky one in terms of what he wants, but he's obviously was a big defensive leader who was asked to do even more when Xavier McKinney went down with his injury midseason. He's obviously a very good teammate and a team leader. I think he's a guy you want back, a good, not a superstar, but a really good, solid NFL player.
Yeah, I agree. I agree on that. What about Darius Slayton? And then we can talk about number one receiver buzzword stuff. So what do you think about that, Slayton?
Darius is a curious guy to me because you obviously did a great story on him this year. And he obviously had a fascinating season that started with a pay cut, and that we're even talking about bringing him back was unlikely 5 months ago, 4 months ago. You know, under the right deal, I would bring him back. He, you know, despite everything that happened to him, he loves being here. He loves playing with Daniel Jones. And he's a deep threat. He obviously has those moments where he has some big drops. But in terms of being part of a receiving rotation because of his speed and his ability to get open, I would say under the right deal, I would bring him back for sure.
And I think we can both agree that I won't put words in your mouth, maybe, but that Sterling Shepard won't and should not be back.
Yeah, and yeah, I think the injuries have caught up to him. You know, it was great that he stuck around and, you know, was part of that team and, you know, talking to players and encouraging players through the entire season after going out so early. I think he's the only guy that got injured that did that, correct? I mean, I'm trying to think of somebody else in that locker room.
Yeah.
He was the only one that they really allowed to do that. So they obviously think he's a high character guy. But I think you need to move on. I think you need to get younger. You know, Kadarius Toney obviously didn't work out, but a very good baseball general manager who's in the Hall of Fame once said to me, you know, just because you screw up something doesn't mean, and they didn't screw it up, but just because something didn't work out doesn't mean you stop trying to do that. And, you know, so the Giants are at the point where you keep trying to get the right wide receiver. The Eagles are an example of that. They tried forever to get the right receivers and never could. And finally they struck gold with Devontae Smith and AJ Brown. But it took him for a long time to do that, and they kept, and Howie Roseman kept trying until he finally hit with the right guys. And that's the position the Giants are in right now.
Great comparison. And that, well, you can just quickly, you know, or it doesn't have to quick, whatever. We can go as long as we want. We'll use this as a jumping off point. Like yesterday, Joe Shane said, number one receiver doesn't guarantee you anything. Okay, I get it. They shut down Justin Jefferson. You know, look, Justin Jefferson didn't play defense for the Vikings in that game, but they did shut him down. And okay, so like, let's look at this Giants receiver room. So his point is this, like, I get what he's saying. He's saying that Giants fans remember this. I mean, the Giants have spent now big money on Golden Tate and Kenny Golladay, right? That's four total seasons since they traded away Odell Beckham, who wound up withering himself. Okay, Golden Tate didn't play a single NFL snap after the Giants released him, and that probably will wind up being true of Kenny Golladay. Complete and total utter bust. Disaster. Yes.
As somebody who watched the Eagles a lot before Golden Tate got to the Giants, if they'd called me, I'd have told them.
What are you doing, right? I mean, cup. That's why those are two examples of why this revisionist history is nonsense when it comes to Dave Gettleman. But okay, so like, what do they do? So Isaiah Hodgins is going to be back, right? Wandale Robinson is going to be back, coming off the ACL tear, but that was later in the season, so he may not even be ready for week one.
He was still using crutches in the locker room,
right?
Sunday on Baggy Day.
Maybe Darius Slayton is back. Obviously, we know Kenny Golladay and Sterling Shepard will be gone. Richie James is kind of a fringe player anyway, but he's a pending free agent. Maybe they bring him back, whatever. The bottom line is they don't have a high draft pick in the first round. They don't have a high draft pick in the second round. So they have one in each of those rounds. So will Joe Shane spend some money on a receiver in free agency?
And here's the problem with that. Go look at the list of guys, and this list could get smaller as guys resign.
Yeah,
it's not a great list. It's not a great list, in my opinion.
I agree. And it's, so remember, you know, Kenny Golladay got $18 million a year from the Giants. Right. That was his average annual value of his contract. So that was quite a bit of money. And that was, you know, 2 years ago. That was in the 2021 offseason. I took a look. SpoTrack does a great job of lists of pending free agents, and they also include market value. So
they do.
It's worth checking that. Those are interesting things to poke around on. So the top, I would say, let's just say the top five receivers this offseason are Juju Smith-Schuster, Jacoby Myers, Allen Lazard, Mecole Hardman, DJ Chark. The market value for those guys is Smith-Schuster at 14, Myers at 12, Lazard at 11, Hardman at 11, Chark at 9.5. So even with cap inflation, none of those guys is projected to get a monster deal. But I mean, he has to get somebody, right? Like, I understand free agency is not always going to be the ideal route and you have to overpay to some degree. But you can't just, like, could you bring back Slayton and pair him with Hodgins and then just like hope on Wandale Robinson? You have to do something, right?
You do have to do something. But as I look at that list, the question that pops into my mind is who's the number one?
Yeah.
You know, who on that list is the number one receiver? You know, again, maybe you take a chance. I don't know. There's nobody on the list. I don't even know who he would begin to get. Juju Smith-Schuster, maybe take a chance on it. Again, not a number one, though. You know, there's just not a guy on the – I just look at the list over and over and just say, nope. and you don't have a number one of your own either. I mean, the Hodgkin story was great, and I think you definitely want him back, and you want to see if he can go to another place. An even better place and maybe become at least a really solid number two guy. But, you know, in all likelihood, well, the other thing we haven't talked about is who's going to be available in the trade market. And I don't know the answer to that right now. And maybe somebody does become available in the trade market.
Yeah, and certainly the Giants are at the point in their rebuild where they should be pushing to go deeper in the playoffs next year. They should. They don't need to be cautious. They can make a trade, right, and try to. Right.
Yeah, sure, and that's how the Eagles got A.J. Brown. So,
you know, put themselves into a better position. I mean, that no one would say like, "Oh, geez, why are you going all in?" Or I mean, you're going to pay your quarterback. Like Joe Shane straight up said yesterday, we want to build around Daniel Jones, give him help, and have him help us win a Super Bowl. So they got to go do it. And I will say, you know, in terms of the draft, Daniel Jeremiah does a great job, put out his first mock draft. He has the Giants actually at 25 picking Jordan Addison, a receiver from USC. Actually, in this draft, according to this mock, the first receiver off the board, which is kind of low for the first receiver, but something to consider. I mean, they could certainly draft a receiver.
Sure.
Well, they need to bolster.
I don't think it's a great receiver class either, to be honest.
I mean, clearly not. I mean, Dale Jeremiah has the first guy going at 25.
Right. I think a lot of people have Quentin Johnston of the TCU as the first receiver going, but whatever. But maybe there is, if a Jordan Addison did drop to 25, I wouldn't be opposed to the Giants taking him there for sure.
Joe Shane has to do something to address this receiver room. Like they have to get more weapons in the passing game, period.
Absolutely. Yep.
The other issues that they have, I mean, wide receiver, we'll stick on offense and address Nick Gates real quick because like interior offensive line. I mean, I don't think John Feliciano's back as the center. The left guard, we'll see. Maybe it's Nick Gates. Ben Bredesen's under contract. The other positions, obviously, they need Evan Neal to get better. They need Andrew Thomas to keep playing great. Glowinski is going to be back because of his contract at right guard. So left guard and center, they got to figure that out. They got to figure out whether they want Gates back.
Yeah, Gates and Bredesen are Bredesen, as you said, is back. They thought of enough Gates to start him. And rotate him with Bredesen. Feliciano was brought in here because he knew the offense. He converted to center. I don't know how they feel about him and whether they feel he can get better at center. This is really his first year playing center. They need to do a better job of protecting Daniel Jones. And as you mentioned, to me, the biggest factor on that offensive line isn't necessarily the interior. It's Evan Neal needing to get better. I mean, he really struggled his first season. You can't afford for your number 7 overall pick to be a bust. And I'm not saying the kid's a bust, but let's put it plainly. It was a terrible rookie season. Now, I made this point in looking at the rookies today, it seemed like he was making some progress before he suffered that MCL injury in Jacksonville. And then came back and was kind of back at ground zero and struggled again. And then he had an ankle thing a little bit late in the season. So was he entirely healthy? Was he making progress? I don't know, but he better make progress next season.
Yeah, I mean, the guy allowed 52 pressures. And let's see, in his 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, in his last 7 games, he allowed, if I could do the math quick, what's that, 36 pressures.
Right.
And
that's when he came back from the MCL. Right before the playoff game, when everybody was worried about his ankle, he basically told me that his MCL still wasn't entirely right and it wouldn't be until he rested. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes from there.
Yeah, Andrew Thomas had a rough rookie year as well, and we'll circle back to the rookie class because I think it's an interesting discussion led by Neal, of course. The defensively, in terms of the Giants' needs, inside linebacker is a revolving door all year. No other way to put it than they have to find some stability there. Their run defense was not good enough.
They could really use a big time playmaker in the middle. I mean, that's. For most teams, there's not inside linebackers aren't playmakers anymore. They're guys you really want to be stout against the run. But they need that. They need that presence for sure.
And, the D line, they'll take care of Dexter Lawrence. You'd think, the Leonard Williams contract is really interesting because, Joe Shane redid it before last year, and Leonard Williams now has a monster salary cap hit, 32.2 next year with $18 million in base salary. And we'll get to corner in a minute, but what do they do with it? I mean, it's $20 million in dead money if they caught him, and $18 in cap savings. So if I'm Leonard Williams and Joe Shane says, oh, do you feel like taking a pay cut? Now, just like, kind of forget what Leonard Williams said. He was just saying the PC thing about like, oh, I'll sure, I'd be open to taking a pay cut. But if Joe Shane says, well, look, we want to lower your $18 million base salary, Leonard Williams should say, go ahead, try it, cut me. You know, you're going to take on $20 million in dead money to save 12. Okay, it's possible, but obviously Leonard Williams is not getting $18 million elsewhere. So that could be Joe Shane's counter. The other option is reworking the deal again or giving some kind of mini extension to kind of spread out the cap hit. But I mean, could they take on 32.2? Yeah, I guess they could, but it's awfully high in terms of a cap number for him.
It is. It you know, they're trying to build a better roster. And when you have $32 million on one player who's, you know, I can't imagine there's another D tackle in the NFL who has a cap hit that high. Maybe I'm wrong, but I haven't looked at all of them, but that's an incredibly high number for a defensive tackle. That's a quarterback number.
You know, yeah, and it's a product of the restructure, but still, yeah.
Right, sure, right. But it's still the reality of $32 million on your cap. And Leonard's a really good player. Is he a great player? He's a really good player, and he helps your team. Neither him nor Dexter Lawrence had a great game against the Eagles. Either of the games where all the starters played, the Eagles just ran up and down the field on them. And again, it's a reflection on inside linemen. It's a reflection on the whole team, really. I mean, they ran any way they wanted, inside, outside, everything. You know, I think what will end up happening is he will acquiesce, and because I think he likes playing here. But I think they'll get some wiggle room out of that. I don't know how much. But I think he will be here, and I think he'll agree to do a little bit of something to help ease the cap hit.
And Joe Shane has shown that he doesn't mind taking on dead money. And again, he could just say, okay, we'll cut you. We'll save $12 million. We'll take on 20, and Leonard Williams is not getting $18 million elsewhere. So maybe Leonard just says, okay, fine. Like, I'll lower that number. I'll lower the 18. So some of that
comes to, and we don't know the answer to this, how they feel about guys like DJ Davidson and Ryder Anderson. One was a low draft pick, and the other one was a undrafted guy. But if they like those guys, and if they think they can play a bigger role, obviously they brought in Justin Ellis and Nick Williams to be part of the rotation last year. But if they like their young guys, you see teams do that all the time. You know, you say, oh my God, they're letting Leonard Williams go. Who are they going to replace him with? And talent evaluators look at these things differently. They're constantly saying, well, what do we project this guy to be? And certainly guys who weren't high picks or even drafted have made names for themselves in this league. So maybe they look at those guys. Ryder Anderson played pretty well when he was in there. DJ Javerson was, Ryder Anderson is a guy you look at, very similar body to Leonard Williams. Andre Patterson, the defensive line coach, told me he was working with the outside backers when they first got him into camp. And he told somebody, he goes, I want that guy. I want him, bring him over here, bring him with my group. So he saw something in him. How much the Giants see him, I don't know. But those things do happen over the course of an offseason.
That's a really good point, because obviously the people in the front office, they're seeing these players more than we are in terms of their practice stuff. And so they're getting, you say, oh, that's sort of an unknown. Well, it's more of a known to them because they're seeing them, how they work in practice and like how they're performing more than just the limited game action that we see them in. And then also the whole concept of like value versus performance, right? So if you're getting Ryder Anderson or DJ Davison, you know, those cap hits are so minimal. Like, is the gap between the production value of them and Leonard Williams worth, you know, however large the gulf is between the cap hits for those players? So that's obviously something they're going to have to assess. And excuse me, in terms of another one in the second, or in the defense there in the secondary. So Adoree Jackson's got a $19 million cap hit in the final year of his contract. The Giants would have to take on 10.5 in dead money with eight and a half in cap savings for cutting him. Like, I don't think they will, because that would be something you do if you're like desperate for cap space. Also, they need to get a number two corner, and then maybe they need to get a new safety if Julian Love leaves. So, like, wouldn't make sense to me. I mean, yeah, $19 million is a pretty high cap number for Adoree Jackson, but to me, it's like, you know, you're not in penny pinching mode.
No, you're definitely not. You know, again, I don't know what they think, and we, you know, he's a forgotten person. What they thought of Aaron Robinson when he did play last year. You know, his season was over in an instant. First the appendix put him out of two games, and then he comes back and immediately gets hurt with a knee injury that ends the season. It was interesting that I think we're going to see Cordell Flott compete for a starting job next season, based on just what Joe Shane made a real point to single him out yesterday as a guy that they really thought was making progress and did. You know, Cordell's not a real big guy in terms of physical stature, but I think they do like him still, and I could see him competing for a starting job next year.
Interesting, and because, you know, he has a versatility, he can play in the slot and outside, and, you know, Darnay Holmes has been just okay in the slot, and so, you know, there could be some moving pieces in that secondary. I think the one piece that won't be moving in the Giants defense is Wink Martindale. I mean, this notion that, like, Brian Daboll should do everything he can to, like, keep Wink Martindale, like, oh, wait, excuse me, like, if Wink Martindale at 60 years of age gets a head coaching job, Brian Daboll could offer this guy the Taj Mahal and he wouldn't come back, and nor should he. It's a binary, so it's a one or one thing. It's like a whatever the proposition, however you phrase it. Either he gets a head coaching offer and he leaves, or he doesn't and he stays. There's no, like, keeping him, whatever. That's a side ramp, but... He interviewed virtually. There it is. He interviewed really, actually, he did interview with the Colts on Sunday, over the computer there. But that's his only interview, right? I mean, I
over that thing, Daryl.
I know. I think Wink. Do you think he'd be a good head coach? I think he would be. I guess his teams don't really see a 60-year-old defensive guy that way, though, right?
Well, so many teams just always want to go offense rather than defense. There are a few exceptions, but I think his personality would lend himself to being a good head coach. You know, talked to enough of his defensive players this season to know that they liked playing for him. He obviously has an aggressive mentality when it comes to playing defense, and I assume he has an aggressive mentality in being a head coach. You know, the funny thing is I think the Giants would have a harder time replacing him than they would Kafka, because I don't know where they would go staff wise because I guarantee if Wink Martindale becomes the head coach, he's taking Drew Wilkins, the outside linebackers coach, with him, who's responsible for a lot of his blitz package designs, you know, and Wink basically told the Giants, if you don't hire me, hire this guy to be your defense coordinator. So I would think he would want him as a defense coordinator. I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think Wink will be back as a defense coordinator.
Yep. I mean, in that reality of today's NFL, benefits Brian Daboll in this case, because Wink Martindale is now, was the defense perfect? No. I mean, they were better in the red zone. I mean, they need better personnel at the areas we talked about, but clearly
they were banged up a lot too.
Clearly, like, he did a good job. Like, there's no doubt. But I think probably the ship has sailed for him in terms of being a head coach, but there's no, you know, look, I mean, the guy does a great job at his job. You know, the Giants will benefit from presumably having him back. And speaking of guys who will be back, I mean, you did a great thing this morning on the rookie class, and we can go through it. Even if we just, you know, we talked about Ryder Anderson a little bit there, And Tomon Fox is another undrafted guy who made it, you know, got some looks. But just one by one here, the draft picks. Kayvon Thibodeau, pretty solid year, something to build on. I mean, he needs to be a star, obviously.
Yes, and we saw his star night was definitely the night in Washington where he scored a touchdown with a strip sack. He saved the game with a game-saving tackle near the end of the game at the 1 yard line. You saw superstar potential for sure. Do they need to see him go to another level? Do they need to see him mentally mature a little bit? I would say yes to both of those things. But if I'm Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, I'm very encouraged what I saw in my first in Kayvon Thibodeau's first season in the NFL.
I agree with all of that. Evan Neal, that's the pick at number 7 that they got for trading back, which will let's one more last shot at Dave Gettleman. He traded back and drafted Kadarius Toney instead of taking Micah Parsons or Rashawn Slater. The end.
After the Eagles, swarmed in and moved ahead of him and got Devontae Smith, the guy they really wanted, and would have helped him at the receiver position. And none of that stuff is good for the Giants. Not a single thing.
They did get the 7th pick in 2022 out of that from the Bears. They take Evan Neal. They think, okay, he'll be bookend with Andrew Thomas. And as we established already, it did not go well for Evan Neal. Enormous pressure for on him entering year 2.
Absolutely.
Wandale Robinson is the everyone has another one with Tony, right? They draft Wandale Robinson 43rd overall, small gadget receiver, slot player in the 2nd round. Oh, Jesus, too much redundancy with Tony. And then they send Tony off to the Chiefs. Wandale Robinson, obviously, some encouraging stuff, but like, can he? The question along for me was like, I understand an ACL is not like a durability, an injury, a product of him being small, but to me, like, that's a question for him. Can he stay durable?
Is he going to get banged up? I mean, the game we saw, his coming out game was against the Lions. He had 100 yards receiving. He was looking great the entire game at 9 catches. Really showed explosive, and he did in some other games too. Showed some real explosiveness, but had 2 different knee injuries in his rookie season. We'll see what happens going forward, but there's things to like. Amazing, as I pointed out earlier, 1 of 4 season-ending ACL injuries for the rookie class. That shouldn't be possible.
It should not. And they had a couple more Achilles tendon tears, I think, on the roster elsewhere.
The one thing I added this up was, so they lost 81 rookie games, I believe the number was. 81 out of a possible 187 games of their rookie draft class were lost to injury.
Wow, that's a remarkable stat.
Like almost 50, that is 43%. A remarkable
stat. And Josh Azudu, the third round pick, the first of their 2 third round picks, got some looks at left guard, really struggled, then dealt with a neck injury. I mean, obviously the jury's still way out on him.
Yeah, for sure. And that neck injury was bad. I remember going up to him and, asking him if he was going to play in the Dallas game. The Detroit game was the game they got beat up they got beat up on the scoreboard and really decimated by injuries heading to Dallas on Thanksgiving. And I remember asking if Josh was going to be able to play, and he could barely move his neck. It was a scary injury, and we'll see what happens going forward. But yeah, he's another guy. Right now, I think he just looks more like of a depth player along the offensive line than a starter, but we'll see.
Yep. Cordell Flott, we have talked about him, the versatility he provides. I would expect him to have a bigger role for sure.
Yep, I would agree with that 100%.
The 4th round pick, the first of 2 there, Dane Belton, the tight end. Would be interesting to see how this shakes out in the do they have a tight end duo here in Dane Belton and then the former Jet Lawrence Cager, who also is under
you said Belton, Daniel Bellinger.
I looked at the DB and Daniel Bellinger, sorry, tight end duo.
We'll get first realizing this is how close their 2 names are and how close they were in the draft.
Dan and then Bel, right? Oh my gosh. So Okay, so Daniel Bellinger, the tight end, obviously, is some encouraging signs of the eye injury. Lawrence Cager will be back, and the reason is he's actually an exclusive rights free agent, which means he's not a free agent at all. It's complicated, but
right. And Cager played very well for them.
Yeah. So how does that shake out with Cager and Bellinger at tight end?
I think Bellinger's more the tight end because I think he's probably a better blocking tight end. But you know, those two guys are good, and I think there's something to you continue to look at and see. I think there's more receiving wise in Bellinger than we saw. You know, some people are going to say, "Well, he only had 268 yards receiving." Well, he also missed four games, so take that and you know, give him those four games, and he'd be among the top two or three rookies at tight end in terms of both catches and yards. I think I really do. So I think, you know, him and Cager are a decent combination to build on. You're probably bringing somebody else along the way. But I don't think they're that bad off in that position. It's a position that some teams have, as we saw with the Eagles and Vikings, they have superstars at those positions. Are either one of those guys superstars? Not right now. They're not. We'll see what happens going forward.
And we get to now Dane Belton, the safety who replaced initially Xavier McKinney, then did not play well, and Jason Pinnock became that guy. So a lot depends here on whether Julian Love leaves in free agency. McKinney will obviously be back, and no, Xavier McKinney is not getting a second contract after year three here. Like, and Andrew Thomas, they should just sit down and talk to him a little bit. I don't think it'll happen, but he's eligible for one. But McKinney, the ATV accident. So he's going to have to prove he can be reliable next year. Maybe he'll do it alongside Love. Maybe it'll be alongside Belton. Maybe it'll be alongside Pinnock, who's under contract through 2024 on his rookie deal. Yep. So Dane Belton is still, you know, they gave him a chance. He's sputtered a little bit.
He did. And he came back a little bit at the end. They gave him the chance to play in that Philadelphia game when they were playing the reserves. And he played pretty well in that game. And he got 10 defensive snaps in the playoff win over the Vikings. I think he came back a little bit from really where there was a stretch there in the middle of the season where they just didn't trust him at all. Pinnock won the job. You know, it was between, you know, initially it sounded like Belton was going to be the main guy replacing McKinney, and Pinnock ended up becoming that guy. We'll see. They'll compete for playing time and training camp and throughout next season. I think they'll come back pretty much where they are right now, competing for playing time.
Yeah, I mean, this team is a team that should be pushing to go deeper into the playoffs. And yes, they're going to have some veteran additions, but the reality remains, as you just alluded to, they'll have young guys competing for starting jobs. You know, young, unproven players. It's not like they're going to be set at every position just because they have a lot of cap space. And moving down the draft list, and we'll combine these two guys, even though they weren't drafted next to each other, Mike McFadden, Darian Beavers, a couple outside linebackers. Beavers obviously was competing to start at Mike, and that wound up being the revolving door spot there. He didn't play at all with, was he an Achilles or ACL? I think it was an ACL.
ACL. He was one of the four ACLs.
And McFadden, they gave a chance to, and then they put him on the bench.
Well, he played every regular season game and then didn't dress for either of the playoff games. So obviously, and they brought in Jarrett Davis, the veteran, to play in the two playoff games. That does not bode well for Mike McFadden. That they didn't trust him to be the guy when it came to playoff time. He'll obviously be back. He'll have a lot to prove to them next year. Beavers, I wasn't there for training camp or preseason, but I did watch all three of the Giants preseason games. It looked like he was playing very well to me in the preseason. Maybe he would have been the guy who got the snaps that McFadden got if he had stayed healthy, but obviously he didn't. So he'll be coming back from ACL and competing for work.
You know, he could have been the week one starter there.
Right.
Beavers and yeah, so yeah. Because of the timing of his ACL injury, you'd think he'd be ready sooner rather than later.
I'll give you a little Giants trivia, 2022 Giants trivia. Who was the opening day starter at the position?
Oh, I know that Austin Calitro, because I wrote that story leading into the season. So,
and we're probably one few people who remember that.
Crazy. And they wound up cutting him. So the names they rotated through at inside linebacker, starting obviously with Blake Martinez, who didn't even make it to the season. Beavers gets hurt. Then let's say in no particular order here, Calitro, Tay Crowder, Jalen Smith, Gerard Davis, Mike McFadden. I think that's it. And they played Landon Collins a little there too. So
Remarkable.
And then a lot of those swaps weren't even because of injuries, but a remarkable revolving door. We'll group the next two guys, we'll mention. Obviously, Beavers was their final pick. But DJ Davidson, a defensive tackle, Marcus McKeithen, an offensive lineman who would have provided some depth this year and did in the case of Davidson. But injuries right bit them both. And
two more ACLs, two of the four. So I found this to be a really interesting stat. There was only one rookie who played in every game, including the two playoff games. Can you name him?
The one rookie for the Giants.
One rookie for the Giants who played in every game, including the two playoff games.
Would that be Flott?
Nope.
Would it be Davidson then?
No, Davidson was out.
No, it wouldn't have been. Would it have been not? Would Belden?
Nope.
What am I missing here? I mean, Thibodeau rested.
I might have screwed up. I didn't screw up the question. No. Let me just check. No, it definitely wasn't Belden. It's the right question. What's that?
Tomon Fox.
Tomon Fox is the answer.
Yeah, because not a draft. A little tricky question there. I like that. And they, you know, he's an edge rusher who, you know, maybe more of a depth guy and a situational rusher, but he was, you know, maybe he provides some depth for him down the road. I mean, he's under contract through 2024, affordable cap numbers.
Right. Yep. So I found that to be an interesting question, though.
Good. But we'll see with the, you know, Davidson and McKeithen depth there.
Sure.
But the Giants obviously have clearly some work to do. So that pretty much like sums up all the offseason stuff. So in terms of schedule here, and we will not be doing a podcast every week. Probably one right before the combine when things start to shake out a little more. If the Giants do something crazy notable, we'll come circle back and do a few minutes of a podcast. So that's sort of where we're at with that. Obviously, be sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe on all your podcasting platforms. We appreciate all that. We always do a pick. Obviously, no Giants game to pick this week. We'll just run through the last three games of the NFL season here and do. And so, Bob, I'll let you. We'll go game by game. Niners, Eagles. Who you got?
I'm gonna take the Eagles because they're home. I think it's gonna be a tough battle, but I got the Eagles winning this one 24-20.
All right, we'll do scores then. I'll take the Eagles. Brock Purdy magic runs out 27-17 Eagles in that one. Bengals Chiefs.
I think with Patrick Mahomes banged up and Joe Burrow playing with more confidence than any man on the planet, I'm going to take the Bengals in that one for a second straight year and go into Kansas City and win. And I got the Bengals 25-19.
Is that a scoregami? I wonder. Maybe that'll be a scoregami. I'll take Bengals as well. Playing on a high ankle sprain the week after you sustain it is basically unheard of in the NFL. It'll be, if Patrick Mahomes wins a Super Bowl on this injury, it'll go down as one of the like gutsiest clutch quarterback performances ever. I think they lose the game 34-24. So Bengals, we both have Bengals. Eagles, Super Bowl. Two great young quarterbacks in Hurts and Burrow. I think it'll be a fantastic matchup. The sentimental favorite, obviously, nationally will be the Bengals because of their history, long history of failure. Now the Eagles got their Super Bowl. So Joe Blow in Tulsa, Oklahoma will probably be pulling for the Bengals, obviously, because, you know, the Eagles got theirs. So let the Bengals try to get one will be the national storyline. What would be your pick for that Super Bowl?
It would be
a really good game, right?
It would be a great game from a personal standpoint of, because I'm going to cover the Super Bowl. I'd love to see the Eagles and Chiefs both going for, well, it would be Andy Reid going for a second against the Eagles.
Oh, that would be juicy.
For their second. That story would make Philadelphians insane, which many Giants fans would love to see. You know, I would have the Eagles winning that one, 27-21. I just think I think the Eagles have the best roster, full roster in the NFL. I think Joe Burrow's better than Jalen Hurts at this point, but I just think the Eagles, both teams have great receivers. That's a great matchup. I just think the Eagles just might have a little bit more complete roster, and they'd win that game 27-21.
The big problem for the Bengals is that they're 31st in the NFL in pass blocking and PFF. And as we
saw, they played great against the Bills the other day.
They did. As we saw, you know, the Bills are fifth in pass rush. The Eagles are on a different level pass rush wise, as we saw in that playoff game, first in pass rush. That would be a concern, obviously, for the Bengals. My heart says Bengals over Eagles. My head says Eagles. I don't know. I'll say Eagles 38, Bengals 35, last second field goal or something like that to win it. I don't know if the Bengals can score 35 against the Eagles defense, but that's what I'll go with. I think it would be. What's that?
I'd watch 38-35.
Sure. Yeah. And you'll have to, actually. You'll be there for the Super Bowl.
No, I won't be watching. I'll be writing.
Yeah. Bob will be out there for the Super Bowl, covering it for us. Regardless, Steve Politi will be out there, our columnist, regardless. We'll see if the Eagles can use that big springboard off that big win from the divisional round against the Giants. And obviously the Giants, meanwhile, trying to build on this strong season that ended inarguably with a dud, with a reality check, with an exposing type loss against a division rival. So a lot of work for Brian Daboll next year, and more immediately for Joe Shane, as we started by saying pressure's on him. Let's see if he can get it done. And we appreciate everyone listening all year. Appreciate everyone reading all our stories. And we will be back with you, I don't know, maybe like a month or so leading into the combine, which really is more of a free agency type event because of all the tampering that goes on there. But plenty to talk about in the offseason. We'll see. I mean, the tag deadline, the start of the tag window happens right before the combine. So there's going to be some news here coming up, but a little bit of a quiet time right now, unless Mike Kafka leaves. And so we'll see how that all shakes out. We appreciate everyone listening, and thanks for everything, guys and gals. And we will be back with you at some point here sooner rather than later, but definitely not next week. So everyone enjoy your week and enjoy the games this weekend, and take care.